You know, you said look out curling world. Screw that. Look out sports world.
Okay, people are going to get tired of, this is about our 15th special show that we've done in the last 3 weeks. But that's what it's all about, baby. It's curling season. Hi again, everybody. Welcome to a special edition of Inside Curling. I want to acknowledge all our three sponsors who've been with us all the way along Inside Curling, Jackpot City, Coyote Tractor, and Goldline. On our weekly show, Coyote Tractor brings you hot rock topics. If you have work to do, Coyote has the tractors, the UTVs, the ZTRs, and the compact construction equipment to do it. Coyote, we dig dirt. Also on our show, Jackpot City brings you what's happening around the curling world. Jackpot City, casino games, perfectly made for you. Special show. A small announcement, okay, over the last few days. Just a little minor thing, a little blip in the curling world. You're aware of the Grand Slams. Kev, you're in Toronto. This is the final Grand Slam. And not only is it the final Grand Slam of the year, it's the final Grand Slam for Sportsnet. Okay, they're being taken over. This just dropped in the last couple of days by another curling group. In fact, their official name is, I think, the Curling Group, if I understand right. The guy who's heading it all up, and he's agreed to come on. What the hell is going on? Nick Sulski joins us, who's heading up this group. You are the new CEO of the Curling Group, who has just purchased the Grand Slams. Welcome to the show, Nick.
Thank you, sir. I'm honored to join you. And I know the Curling Group is an extraordinarily cryptic name for what we're doing. I know it took a lot of creativity on that one. But I just wanted to fix one thing. While Sportsnet is no longer the owner of the Grand Slam of Curling, Sportsnet is still going to be our long-term partner. They're going to be our Canadian broadcaster. We have a great relationship with the folks at Sportsnet, and we're all pretty excited to keep the Grand Slams thriving on our nation's best live sports programmer. So yeah, there you go.
How did it start, Nick? This usually happens over a beer somewhere with a guy going, we should get involved in the Grand Slam. How did it all come down?
Man, like it's been a long road for me falling in love with the sport of curling. I mean, up until last week, I've started transitioning out of my role as Chief Commercial and Revenue Officer for PointsBet. And most of your listeners will probably be aware that PointsBet's the official partner of Curling Canada. So, I worked really closely with Catherine Henderson while she was there, and then Nolan Thiessen. We launched the PointsBet Invitational, which has been incredible. So I started to kind of fall in love not only with the sport, but with the curlers. And that's really what kind of opened my eyes. And Kevin will laugh, because he knows probably better than anyone. My first introduction to the world of curling was Benny Hebert. And so I met Benny and I was like, holy crap, this is not what I expected about the sport of curling. Right. And then, over the last couple of years, I've just become more, I'm not a curler. I'm just a fan. I've gotten more and more familiar and comfortable with the community, with the curlers, with the fans, with the media properties. The Grand Slams weren't for sale, but I have a relationship with the Sportsnet folks over years of being a gaming and media, professional in Canada and in North America. And, it was, candidly over a beer where, the conversation around partnering and taking the Grand Slam to the next level kind of came up and it moved pretty quickly. It's kind of the worst kept secret in curling, but it was a very, it had to be a secret. It moved pretty quick and it wasn't something we were able to kind of publicly talk about. And then literally until, the agreement was signed over the weekend officially on Monday, and the announcement came out yesterday. So I think this is actually 24 hours pretty much to the time when the world learned about this news. So it's been a pretty crazy day of being involved officially with the Grand Slams.
Nick, is this something that you looked at when you came up with the idea? You sat down and started to float the idea, what was going on inside your head. When you looked at it and the Grand Slam, did you say, I'd love to get my hands on this because you mentioned you love the curlers, but we could improve it. We could change it. We could, I don't want to say fix, but maybe it is that you looked at this and said, yeah, man, we got to get involved in this because I'd like to do this.
I think kind of all of it. Really, I mean, a lot of curling around the world up until yesterday. Operated was strategically built by not-for-profits, by curling associations whose number one goal isn't necessarily making money. In Sportsnet, an incredible broadcaster, but candidly, their focus is Canada. Curling, as we all know, is starting to really blow up around the world, especially in Asia. You know, as a entrepreneur, as a brand builder, over the last year and a half, it's been impossible to miss the amount of private equity and venture capital that's been invested in niche sport and has been invested in sports that feature women. And as we all know, women's curling is now kind of more watched than men's curling. Women's curling is really exploding. And, you know, I think the opportunity to inject some real capital and real investment in a property that already exists, that has legacy, has an incredible tradition, help evolve that, invigorate that, and grow that brand all over the world made a ton of sense, right? So kind of it's all going to, I think, change. Not, right. I shouldn't say the whole sport's going to change. You know, I'm not a curler. So we're going to take the perspective of the non-curler to inject a lot of energy and to basically piggyback on a lot of the things that we've learned from other sports, like what the Waste Management Open meant for golf. Mm-hmm. Right. There's a lot of examples out there that I think we're going to be able to copy to help really blow up this sport all around the world.
What's your background, Nick, before this points bet thing? You sure sound like you know what you're talking about with this thing. Tell us a little bit about Nick.
Yeah. So I'll you know, from the beginning, I mean, what's funny is I actually started my career in film and television. I actually hosted, produced, and directed my own kids' television show on the Family Channel. So I'm a content guy. Yeah, man. This is before YouTube though, because I'm a little old. So you can't find the clips online if you want. I have them on my phone. I had to film them off my television on a DVD because there was no YouTube at the time. But because of that, I started talking about sports on Off the Record. So I was actually on Off the Record with Michael Landsberg about 50 sure. times. I was on Michael's very last show, did a bunch of other sports shows. But then I got into fantasy sports and I started building fantasy sports and gaming startups. I had a number of different startups. And then the most prominent one, I ended up co-founding and building what became the third biggest daily fantasy sports company in the U.S. called Monkey Knife Fight. Monkey Knife Fight, we built it in, and within 3 years, we sold it to Bally for $90 million USD in January of 2021. What? And then I left Monkey Knife Fight and joined PointsBet to build. I was the first employee in Canada, and I was responsible for helping build the Canadian business, the Canadian team. And so, I mean, I've been a brand builder and a gaming operator my entire life and a content professional. So I kind of think, and my wife kind of jokes with me as I was trying to explain to her that I was leaving my fairly well-paying job, my, you know, nice, secure existence to jump back into the startup world. My wife, who is, we've been married for over 20 years, and she's very understanding. She's like, okay. You know, but I think this is everything you've been building your entire career for. And I believe it and I feel it. And yeah, I'm so excited. It's kind of like day two of the world knowing, and I just can't wait to really get to work.
God, when the people hear this interview, they're going to be excited as well, man. You got some verve to you, pal. You got
some verve, man. And I try, and this is early. I'm just drinking coffee. Wait until the tequila is flowing in the Aperol Spritz tonight, man.
You made everyone more than curious, man. Good, Kev.
Well, yeah, thanks, Nick. It was for sure 10:30 when it was announced yesterday, because at 10:31 my phone blew up. oh my God. But I wasn't paying attention. Holy cow, that's when I sent you a note. I went, oh my goodness. Anyway, congratulations.
Thank you.
One thing I read, but there, you know, obviously there's been a lot of stuff written in the last 24 hours, but one place I read, which is kind of interesting, was written about other types of curling events. Like, not like the Grand Slam's always been, since it was invented, a group of events with current curling, you know, 16 teams or 15 teams, 12 for the players, you know what I mean? But I read something where you had said you're thinking of other types of events. What does that mean?
So one of our partners, one of my friends, he's on our executive team, is Jared Allen, right? Jared, ex Pro Bowl superstar defensive end in the NFL, who you and your listeners probably know has dedicated himself to make the U.S. Olympic curling team. So Jared is very kind of new into the sport of curling. And when he and I started becoming friends and started talking about it, the traditional structure of curling as we know it has existed for decades, right? Decades and decades. That doesn't mean that that is what curling has to be forever. So when we talk about different events, look at all the different sports. There used to be a skins game. Well, maybe we'll think about bringing back some skins games. Right now, mixed doubles has gotten popular. There's 4-on-4 men, 4-on-4 women, one man, one woman, one man, one woman. Well, we can mix around those numbers. Maybe there's different end lengths. Maybe there's different elements to the game, like the blank that we're going to want to have fun with. Now, of course, your question was more about the events themselves. It's all on the table, right? We want to bring a non-curling worldview into the sport and create great, compelling content. Now, what that content looks like and what those events look like, again, 24 hours into officially being the owner of the Grand Slam of Curling. So me and the team have a lot of work to do. And I think the most important thing to me and to my team is to make sure that the current crop of curlers understand that we are going to listen to them, that they have to be a part of these conversations. And a lot of them have incredible ideas. I am by no means a person that's going to kind of dictate what things are going to look like or what things are going to sound like or what things are going to be like. I want to listen. I want to understand. I want to learn. And I want to hear some incredible ideas because, as I said to them yesterday morning, a rising tide lifts all boats. I am very much a kind of a team player. You know, I grew up as an athlete. I played rugby my entire life. And if anyone who's played rugby, they understand, like, yes, you might have a position, but your role has to evolve as the game is played, right? You have to score and defend as one. And you are as strong as your weakest link. And so I want to make sure that we listen to everybody and we build this together. So I'm open to ideas. Hey, if you guys have an idea, I want to hear it, man.
So what a lot of the texts that I've had from, messages from all over the place after this announcement was, like, obviously everybody sees the Asian market growing really, really fast. And the U.S. actually, with clubs opening, are doing very well. So expansion is a great thing. What does it look like to you time-wise? Because, like, this is a question I'm getting absolutely drilled with. So I promised I would ask you, just in your mind. Obviously, it can change because you're only 24 hours in. But when does it switch from only Canadian to U.S. or even having an event actually in Asia?
So I will say, again, 24 hours in.
Yep.
I'll say one kind of macro statement, then a micro statement. One of the reasons why I got excited, so excited about curling and about this property, we know every 4 years when the Winter Olympics, curling blows up all over the world, especially in the U.S. We know it. It happens every 4 years. So we know exactly when lightning is going to strike the clock tower, right? One of my favorite movie references right there. So we know for the next 2 years, we have an opportunity to help build to a moment where we know curling is going to be in the spotlight. And so our number one goal is to make sure we can maximize and leverage the moment that we know inevitably is coming, Italy 2026. What the world of curling looks like after the next Olympics? Well, that's what we're really going to work hard at trying to figure out. For the next couple of years, the Grand Slams are going to work and operate pretty close to how they're operating now. Yeah, we're going to make some changes, cosmetic changes, and trying to inject some waste management open energy into the events for sure. I don't think it would be a big leap to predict that there will be at least one, if not two, Grand Slam of Curling events outside of Canada the 25-26 season. Next year, you know, we're pretty much locked into our five locations, which we're so excited about. Charlottetown, Nisku, St. John's, Guelph, and Toronto, I think are great locations for curling. What it looks like that if the following season, kind of our year two, well, that's all on the table.
Great. Thanks for joining us, Nick, and congratulations on your acquisition.
Thank you.
Big topic here. I'm just trying to figure what angle should I come from. So let's talk about the sport overall in the world. Canada is in kind of a unique position as a nation of only 40 million people, roughly. that we are the nucleus of curling in the world. But at the same time, with 73 nations, there's probably, we have access to about a 3 billion audience around the world where the sport does exist. But it's here in Canada. Canada is not doing as well as it once did as far as the events in this country. We can go back and where I was involved. We did a Brier in 2005 that had an attendance of 280,000. Today, they're struggling to get 100,000. It's a demographic shift, but the sport, to some degree, hasn't shifted with the demographic. So I think this is your first challenge as Canada. What do you see as being the main focus that you can do to make these events on the ground more attractive to people under the age of 40, more exciting, more fun?
Great question. I think, first of all, what we have to understand is the actual curling event itself, the actual match, that's just one aspect of what it means to be a part of the curling community. I think there's a level of what struck me going to my first Brier, going to my first major curling event, even going to my first GSOC was, it's kind of Jekyll and Hyde, right? You go to a curling event, and true story. So last year I was at the Brier, and I was there with Johnny Morris and Donovan Bailey. And Donovan Bailey and Johnny are having this incredible conversation at Budweiser Garden in London. Johnny's telling Donovan everything. Like, there's a really incredible conversation. And then all of a sudden, this older lady who was sitting in front of them turned around and went, shh. I was like, okay, this is like two of the greatest Canadian athletes of all time. They're having an incredible conversation about curling at a curling event. Why are you shushing them? And then an hour and a half later, I walked down in the patch, and it is a party. And Jamie Cooey's off in the corner doing push-ups against fans, and everyone's having a great time. I'm like, there is a disconnect between the curling event itself and the curling events and the curling community as a whole. So I think our job one is to try and fuse the energy of Après Curl and Patch into the venue. I think our job is also to program some shoulder content that showcases the type of energy we want to bring to the sport, whether it's concerts, great bands, whether it's experiential events that are partnered with some incredible brands that we hope to bring into the sport. It's kind of all on the table. So, I mean, I think, Warren, job number one is exactly what you said. How do we inject a new youthful energy into the events themselves to make them more exciting for the younger curling fan to want to come and not only buy tickets, but have fun, right? You watch the World Championships over the weekend. There was a great energy in the barns over in Switzerland, right? Yes, Regina at the Brier was absolutely off the hook. It was incredible, right? But you watch international events, you watch the Olympics, it has a different vibe than your traditional, call it Canadian curling event. Well, that's got to change, right? And a lot of my conversations with curlers, they embrace that. Whether it's music in the venue, whether it's more rowdy crowds and more energy, they're all for it. It's just people have to start it. People have to spark it. People have to try it. And that's kind of our job number one. And we're going to test and learn. We're not going to know all the answers on day one. Charlottetown, we're going to do our best to blow up that city. But that's just step one on what we're – that's just the opening rock of the first end, to use a proper curling analogy, you know?
Yes, there's a lot of mountains to climb without question in Canada. But let's talk about the other, I think, big challenge right out of the gate is going to be the United States. 340 million people. Curling is very in the minds of a lot of Americans. And interesting, like with this show even, 20% of our audience is American, despite the fact that there's very little awareness created in the U.S. about what we're even doing, yet that's the number of people we attract. When I left Curling Canada in 2015, I spent 4 years with USA Curling trying to move that ball down the road, and huge challenge because of the lack of funds. But we had managed to move it, and I think things were going in the right direction. Then COVID hit, and everything blew up. And unfortunately, everything went back from where we had gained ground to where it was before. But that's the challenge. I mean, you've got to get the United States ingrained with this whole thing. How do you see going about that? I mean, I can go back. We did 4 events in Las Vegas, 2015 to 2022, I believe, and 2 world championships. But interesting, our focus, we marketed those events only in Canada. We attracted 5,000 people that we didn't even advertise in Las Vegas because we couldn't afford to. So how do you tackle that huge mountain of getting more involvement with USA? Because the interest is there. How do you get to them?
Another great question, and I'll give you two answers to that. So the first is celebrity. We know that celebrity is a massive driver, especially in the US, when it comes to growing sports popularity. So I mentioned Jared Allen. You know, he's got a level of cachet in the US that is legitimate, and he has dedicated himself to the sport of curling. There's a number of other individuals, NFL stars like George Kittle, who have embraced and have fallen in love with the sport of curling. Another friend of mine, another member of our advisory team, is another former NFL Pro Bowl quarterback, Mark Bulger. Mark has opened up a curling venue and curling bar in Nashville, and it is blowing up, and it is awesome. My wife and I actually went down in June to visit and check it out, and it is everything I think curling clubs need to be. Curling clubs typically haven't really evolved in decades and decades, right? Well, curling clubs themselves and the facilities have to evolve, and Mark has proven over the last number of years that you can build a thriving curling venue and curling community in a warm, somewhat southern U.S. state. That's amazing. So I think the challenge for us is going to be figuring out how to leverage and embrace and harness the growing curling celebrity of some of these ex and current NFL stars to help build on that celebrity factor. And the reality is, not to use a different winter sport analogy, but a Rolling Stone, you know, collects more snow, or a snowball collector. That's a bad analogy, but you know what I'm saying. The second piece of this whole thing is content. You need content to help grow audience. And you can break off that content in two areas. One is the obvious one, is US distribution. We need to be able to find a channel and a distribution partner for the Grand Slam of curling in the US. Now, whether that's on a streamer, whether that's on, you know, just going through YouTube Live, or whether it's, you know, another kind of OTT solution, or whether it's with one of the bigger conventional broadcast partners, we need to figure out a way to get curling available for the US audience to watch whenever they want, and most importantly, kind of for free. But the other piece to the content puzzle is all of the incredible digital and social content channels that have popped up within the social realm. You know, whether it's Instagram, TikTok, you know, Facebook, Snapchat, Twitch, all of these play, you know, we need to do a better job as a curling team community to embrace the power of these content channels to help grow the sport. And this is where the curlers will also come and play a role. We need to create more compelling, engaging, short-form content that we can then leverage and monetize across these channels, because that will help grow the sport as well. So, I mean, again, like I'm not being whatever, the analogy of a rising tide lifts all boats is 100% true. Our goal is to inject more money into the curling ecosystem from an investment perspective. If the curlers want to make more money, which is all of our plans, all of our goals, they need to participate and help us do that. And that help is through content. That help is through engagement with fans, not just in real life, but in the virtual world, in the digital world as well.
Nick, baby, I'll tell you what, I feel like I met a new friend, man. Holy, you are awesome, man. You are absolutely awesome with your injection into this whole thing, man. God, you're excited. It's I can't help but think, look out, curling world. When I hear you talk, it sounds to me, Nick, that you don't have all the answers. But I think I'm looking at a guy and listening to a guy who said, you know what, I got a gut feeling, man. I don't know everything, but I tell you what, there's something there, baby, and let's take a run at it. Does that kind of characterize you?
Yeah, that pretty much sums it up. I mean, the reality is, guys, and I apologize for the swear word, but I'm no bullshit. I put it all on the table. I just call it the way I see it. You know, and the one thing that I'll say, Jim, is, you know, you said, look out, curling world. Screw that. Look out, sports world, right?
Oh, wow. Okay.
So that's the way I feel about this right now. I think we have an incredible Olympic global sport with unbelievable athletes, or that we're going to get ready to take its place on a truly elite national or international stage.
You said you're a rugby player.
Yeah, man.
There can't be a better athlete suited for rugby. Players are crazy, man. This is
so are you, Jim.
I know. I can't think stuff like that. Like, you are not going to be knocked down from this. You will not be stopped. I don't care what you guys say. I don't care what naysayers say about curling, the image of it, oh man, all that stuff. It sounds to me like when people bring you the, you know, the devil's advocate side, you're going, maybe, but I'll take it on. I'll take it on.
I like challenges. I mean, not to get too personal, but again, I'm an open book. I've had non-Hodgkin's lymphoma for over 16 years, so I'm used to challenges. This past November, you'll appreciate this. This past November, my PointsBet did a raising money for Movember. And this is just to give you an example of the kind of person I am. Raising money for Movember. I put a post out on LinkedIn, and my former boss and business partner, Monkey Knife Fight, who's an incredible fella, he sent me a text, and I pledged to run 200 kilometers in November to raise money. I'm a runner. I run every morning.
Of course you did.
And he's like, 200 kilometers? Bullshit. I don't think you can do it. But I'll tell you what. I will give you $1,000 for every kilometer you run over 200. And then, because I'm also a bit of a teenage boy, I was like, well, that's a pretty good challenge. So because I'm a teenage boy at heart and my favorite number is 69, I really love the idea of making this guy write a $69,000 USD check. So I ran 269 kilometers in the month of November, not only to raise great funds for Movember and cancer research, but to get him to write that check. I love challenges, man, and this is going to be the greatest challenge of my life, and I cannot wait.
No kidding, man. Yeah, no kidding. You can hear that. You talked about involving the players, which is music to Warren and Kevin's ears for sure. They've, you know, even all the players we've interviewed, and we get all the best. We just finished with Nick Adin. All of them, Nick has said, we need a place at the table. That has been the number one missing thing with trying to grow our sport. We feel like we're ignored. We feel like there's a bunch of stuff about sponsorships and all, you know, rules of the game and all this stuff. You had mentioned that a few minutes ago about getting the players involved. When you do meet with them, Nick, what are you going to say to them or offer to them? I don't mean money, of course. I just mean going forward.
Well, I don't know if this is a secret, but before the media went out yesterday at 10:30 in the morning, Sportsnet and us had a players-only meeting where all the players who were here in Toronto were in a room, and we introduced ourselves properly to them. And so I've already told them. They are off my email, my cell phone. I'm going to be at Matame all week. And I mean, not that when I'm not at Matame, they can't find me. I want to talk to them. I need to hear from them. I want to listen to them. And I know, and I don't think it's a huge secret in the curling world, there's five of the greatest new current curlers have created a little committee, and they've been working and thinking about ideas that they wanted to bring to Sportsnet. Well, I called this out right in the meeting, and I know these five curlers quite well. And the first thing I said to them was, let's find some time to talk this week. Let's start working. Right. Because I mean, this is the wrong word to use in Canada. Like, I am not an authoritarian leader, put it that way. Right. I need to listen. This is it's not necessarily a democracy. You know, like, everyone has a vote, but like, the decisions that we're going to make have to be made as a community of curler, and as the curling group, and as, you know, Sportsnet and the incredible people there. Like, we need to work together. So I know that's not really answering your question, but I need to learn. I need to hear what they want to do. And most importantly, I want to hear what they don't want to do, you know, because I'm going to push the envelope or I'm going to push the line as far as we can push it. Because I think that's what's needed to inject a new energy into the sport. And yeah, will this piss off? And I said this, I don't know, to Devin or to somebody else, like, you know, is this going to piss off some of the kind of old school traditional curlers, some of the things that we do? Yeah, maybe. But you know what? I don't care. I want them to be fans, and I want them to love the sport, but I want them all to understand that the changes that we are going to make are in the best interest of building and growing and providing a longer level of security, not only for the sport, but for the curler. I want to see the day when curlers have to have second jobs gone. They are professional athletes. I want to see that day come. It's going to take time. It's not going to happen tomorrow. It's not going to happen next year. I can see a future where these are professional athletes on the same level as the other great professional athletes that quite literally don't have to work a second job to make sure they can provide for their family. That is crazy to me.
Hey, curling, welcome to Nick Sulsky's world, baby. Okay, that's, hey, curling, have you heard about this guy, Nick Sulsky? Holy man, what a great interview. I can't help anyone who's listening to this, even if they're, you know, not curlers, they're going to go, hey, we got to speak to that guy. You know, he can help our everything.
It's too bad I'm shy and I'm not my opinion now, you know?
Like I said, Nick, I feel like I met a new friend. I'm going to grab a bottle of tequila. I'm going to find you in Toronto and we're going to sit down and shoot the shit, as you said about this.
Would love it, man. Anytime. I am not shy, yeah. as now you know.
Are we to understand before you go, Johnny Moe is one of your partners, and is Jennifer Jones involved in this as well?
Yeah, I mean, Jen's been advising. I got to know Jen over the last couple of years, and she's incredible. And when I found out that she was retiring, you know, I reached out and I said, hey, I've been thinking about this idea. Would love to get your input. Would love to get your take. You know, I think she's still working through what retirement plans look like, and we're still trying to figure out what sort of kind of overall role she can have with us, but that'll take shape over the next little while. I mean, and as far as Johnny goes, I mean, Johnny's become a friend over the last couple of years. You know, there's very few people who are as liked and trusted in the international curling world as Johnny. So I think it was really important for me, especially, and my partners to, have a sounding board and have a partner at the table with the ilk of JMO, you know?
Yeah.
And I say this to a lot of people. It's like, walk into a curling venue with John Morris. It is unlike anything you'll ever experience. Like, I've had the great pleasure of meeting a lot of athletes and celebrities and stuff like that. And walking into different sporting venues or concerts or whatever it is, honestly, none of it, no one compares to walking into a curling event or to a Brier with John Morris. It's just unbelievable to me. It's so funny.
I love your curling hat too, man. I want one of those. I want one of those.
Consider one saved for you, man. Totally.
Thank you, man. There's a new sheriff in town. The Grand Slam of Curling got sold to a group called the Curling Group, and it's headed up by Nick Sulsky, who you just heard. And look out, man. Nick, thanks so much, and congratulations on a huge, huge day for you guys. And God, do we ever look forward to seeing what's coming down the pipe.
Thanks. Well, guys, thank you so much for having me. I've been obviously a listener and a fan of the show for a long time. And hey, you know where to find me. You can come with tequila or not. We'll still have a great time.
Right on, Nick. See you later, man.
Thanks, Nick.
Hey, thanks, Nick.
Well, there we go. And there he goes. Okay, off on he's probably jumping. This guy sounds like an adrenaline junkie. What a show, man. Thanks very much, Nick Sulsky, for coming on the show. And, of course, it's the new owners of the Grand Slam of Curling. We want to thank all our sponsors. We couldn't do it without them. As we wrap this special edition, Jackpot City brings you what is happening around the curling world. Coyote Tractor, the sponsor of Hot Rock Topics, and Goldline, who brings you In the House. I bet we'd love to hear from you, the fan, the listener. InsideCurling@gmail.com about what you think of Nick coming on with the Grand Slam. That's InsideCurling@gmail.com. Thanks, everybody. Thanks, Mike, our producer. Okay, getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning to do this. And thanks a lot to Rod Paulson. Also, before we leave, we got more stuff happening this week. Tomorrow, our weekly show will drop. And a reminder, we will update shows Friday night and Saturday from the old Maple Leaf Gardens, Kev. It's the final Grand Slam of Curling event, and we'll be tuning in. Are you working hard, Kev, this week?
Yeah, a lot of games this week, and great games. Yeah, everybody loves the old Maple Leaf Gardens. You come here and you walk around the concourse. They've got all the old pictures from back in the hockey days, and it's a real special place, and the players love it, and so do we.
Do you hang out with your son? Of course, Carrick is with Team Cooey. Do you hang out with him?
Well, I don't know if I have time to hang out with anybody, but I definitely see him. We'll get together at least once during the event and talk a little bit about the event and what's going on. But, you know, we start at, we're on location by 10:30, quarter after 10, and we don't leave the building till about 10, 10:15, 10:30 sometimes. So it's getting pretty late. Yeah, you're kind of busy.
I used to do that same type of shift at the bar. Warren, time to get out of here. Boy, there's lots happening in the curling world. Thanks a lot, Kevin. Thanks a lot, Warren. And we'll talk to you. Take it easy, everybody. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Jim.